puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Yes, it is time once again for Abandoned Manitoba. Let's welcome to the show from the Manitoba Historical Society, Gordon Goldsboro. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Marjorie.
So remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, inevitably, when one talks about abandoned things as we do, there are bound to be changes over time. So periodically in this Abandoned Manitoba series, we have updates based on new information about some of the topics we have discussed in the past. I have 9 updates to share with listeners this morning, and we're going to discuss them in reverse order that we talked about them originally, from the most recent to the farthest back.
So, Gord, what's our first update?
Well, 3 weeks ago, I talked about stop butts, which are concrete structures used as outdoor shooting ranges, usually at military bases. The focus of that episode was a butt northeast of Brandon on the road to CFB Shiloh that was used during the First World War by militia units from the Brandon Armory. I also mentioned having found butts at several bases from the Second World War, including 2 near Dauphin and 1 at Souris. Well, I was subsequently advised by listeners that there is also a butt at the former military base just south of Hartney and also at 17 Wing here in Winnipeg.
Very interesting. Now, you also told us about Canada's first helicopter and how it was piloted by farmers. Tell us a little bit more about that. What's the update?
Well, I talked about the 3 pioneering farmers from Homewood that flew basically Canada's first helicopter. They built it, they piloted it. But I also mentioned a gyrocopter that had been built in the 1970s at LaSalle by a Roman Catholic priest named Georges Svoboda. Basically, the idea was that the gyrocopter was pulled aloft by a truck. Well, I subsequently heard from a listener, Ed Labossier, who had been a teacher at LaSalle, and he had a remarkably similar experience in being asked to tow Father Svoboda into flight. There appears to have been no surviving photos of Father Svoboda's gyrocopter, but Ed was able to describe it rather graphically as consisting of large drooping blades, a rudimentary rudder, a simple joystick, 3 wheels, and best of all, a lawn chair for a seat.
Now, Gordon, you've shared with us here on the show how you and your wife would go on walks and discover some interesting things. Take us back a little bit. Remind us of what you and your wife had discovered.
Well, about 2 months ago, I talked about the former corner stores that we discovered during our leisurely walks through some of Winnipeg's older neighborhoods. I mentioned how some of these stores, while operated as independent businesses that were not affiliated with chains like Safeway or Piggly Wiggly, did sometimes belong to groups that enabled them to have, for example, bulk buying, get better pricing. Well, a couple of these chains in the 1930s were the Anchor Stores and the Red and White Stores. There was also a thing called Pure Foods. Well, a listener reminded me of another such chain of independent neighborhood groceries, one a little closer to the present, the Solo Stores. And in fact, in 1954, there were 43 Solo Stores all around Winnipeg in virtually all of its neighborhoods.
Now, the Red Barn in Brandon, it was in the news. You also talked about this too. What's the latest on the Red Barn in Brandon?
Right. You know, the Red Barn is located at Brandon's Experimental Farm, which is one of the first 5 such facilities in Canada that were established back in the 1880s for agricultural research and development. This barn, built in 1917, was used for a variety of purposes through the years, but it's been mostly used for storage for the past several years. An assessment of its heritage value back in 1998 concluded that it didn't warrant preservation. Now, the Manitoba Historical Society, helped by Member of Parliament Larry McGuire, tried to raise awareness of the unique nature of this barn, especially in light of the fact that barns like it are disappearing all over Manitoba. But Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada was unwilling to reconsider its plan to demolish the barn. After speaking to a couple of officials there, I am informed that the barn has been emptied and salvaging of some of its parts notably the roof cupolas and some of its original timbers, has commenced. So although I regret the loss of the building itself, I am encouraged that the Historical Society has been invited to work with Agriculture Canada to develop a monument for the grounds of the experimental farm to raise awareness of its 133 years of service to prairie agriculture.
Very interesting. Gord, you also have an update, too, on a statue that a lot of Winnipeggers are familiar with.
Exactly right. Yeah. Back in September, we talked about the former ski hill at Agassiz in Riding Mountain National Park and its connection to a fiberglass statue called Alpine Archie in McCreary. Well, that statue was the work of sculptor Giorgio Baroni, along with other such noteworthy sculptures as the White Horse along the Trans-Canada Highway, the Viking at Gimli, Tommy the Turtle at Boisvane, and, of course, quite a few others. Well, recently it was reported that another of Baroni's sculptures, the High Neighbor Sam statue, which stood on the boulevard of Regent Avenue in Transcona, it's been moved indoors to be restored fully. And among the restoration work to be done is that years of accumulated paint on its exterior will be removed. I'm anticipating he is going to look glorious when he is returned to his spot there on Regent Avenue.
That is wonderful news. In the summer, Gord, you talked about some small buildings that were found on cemeteries. What's the latest on that?
Right. Our episode back in August featured small buildings within cemeteries at Melitta, St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery here in Winnipeg, and the Transcona Cemetery. They were winter vaults used at a time when it was not possible to bury the dead, when the ground was frozen hard in the winter. Well, it seemed curious to me that there were only three such vaults. Given that this was a fairly universal problem for all cemeteries in Manitoba, I expected to hear about a lot more of them after people heard about the ones we talked about. I was therefore surprised to add just one to the list. It's in the cemetery at Deloraine, and I thank Gary Davis for bringing it to my attention. I challenge our listeners to show me that there are indeed more winter vaults around the province. The key that allows you to identify them is that they are distinguishable from maintenance sheds in having rather robust walls, usually made out of bricks, and often with things like metal bars or other coverings on their windows.
Gord, we've known how it's been some really challenging time for legions here across Canada, and you actually noticed something about a legion recently, right?
Exactly right. Yeah. 3 years ago, back in October of 2018, our theme was the Royal Canadian Legion building at Hudson, Manitoba. It was one of many around Manitoba that are falling on hard times due to the declining number of veterans who are eligible for membership. My information indicates that the former Hudson Legion that was built in 1964 is still standing. But driving down Pembina Highway the other day, I noticed that a metal demolition fence is newly installed around the Fort Garry Legion building. It closed back about a year ago, and it seems that its demise is imminent.
Oh, that's really unfortunate. Gord, we've heard about Kennedy House, and you also have some news about it.
Exactly, yes. Back in April of 2017, we described this stone building along the Red River, known as Kennedy House. It was built between 1866 and 1870 for fur trader and Arctic explorer William Kennedy. It was beautifully restored by a family physician named Edward Shaw back in 1970 as a Manitoba Centennial Project. It's surrounded by lavish gardens. You know, people go there for wedding photos and the like. It was purchased by the provincial government after Shaw died, and it was used for 12 years as what Canadian Living magazine described as one of the best places for afternoon tea in Canada. Unfortunately, in 2015, the proprietor of the tea room was abruptly evicted. And since then, numerous groups have been asking the provincial government to clarify its intentions for the building. Well, there's been no response until now. Just 2 days ago, the Honorable Sarah Guillemard, the Minister of Conservation and Climate, announced the allocation of $350,000 to carry out repairs to its foundation. Well, I take this as a good sign that the government sees a future for the house. And this is really exciting. You know, it does remain to be seen, though, if they have plans to use the building. or if it intends to maybe allow some other group to use it as a maybe a museum or even a commercial enterprise such as a tea room.
Yeah, that is great news. Gord, on the flip side, though, we've talked to you, you know, whether it's been on this show or other shows like Radio Noon about buildings that haven't been able to survive or that face demolition. And you have one more to share with us that makes you a little bit emotional.
Yep, this is the hardest one for me to talk about. I think because it affects me personally. Way back in December 2015, I described Mallard Lodge, a grand old hunting lodge on the south shore of Lake Manitoba. It was built in 1932 by noted Winnipeg businessman and athlete Donald Bain. The two-story wooden building, it has a sumptuous living room featuring a large stone fireplace, a well-appointed kitchen and 9 bedrooms, was purchased in the early 1960s by the provincial government, and it was turned over to the University of Manitoba for use as a facility for environmental teaching and research, something called the Delta Marsh Field Station. I was the director of that facility from 1996 to 2010. Unfortunately, it was closed by the university in 2011, supposedly because of damage caused by a major flood that year, and the building was turned back to the government. After sitting vacant now for the last decade and becoming increasingly vandalized over that time, the government recently issued a tender for Mallard Lodge to be demolished. The successful bidder on that tender is apparently going to begin work very soon. And in fact, last week, I had one last chance to visit Mallard Lodge, and it was absolutely heartbreaking to see all the damage inflicted by vandals and to know how beautiful it had once been. There is, however, a small ray of hope that I hope might mean it will survive. The demolition crew has asked permission to move the building if a suitable buyer can be found. And I really do hope this may still happen. I'll probably know more by the time we have our next update episode of Abandoned Manitoba.
Yeah, we would love to hear what's the very latest on Mallard Lodge. Now, Gord, it is hard to believe that it is the end of 2021 and we don't have a show next week, but what's up in 2 weeks on the first episode of Abandoned Manitoba in 2022?
Well, periodically, we discuss buildings whose status is unknown, what I call buildings in limbo. Well, in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about one such building at the University of Manitoba that dates to the very beginning when its Fort Garry campus in South Winnipeg was the Manitoba Agricultural College.
Looking forward to this. Thank you so much, Gordon, and happy holidays to you and a happy new year in 2022.
Thank you, and best wishes for the holidays for you and, of course, for all of our listeners. I really appreciate them over the last year.